Ever wonder the true power of sports? Well, you come to the right place. Welcome to the Sports for Social Impact podcast. I'm David Thibodeau, and I believe that by exploring the intersection between sport and society, we can better leverage the sport industry for maximum impact. We explore what sport's true power is to understand the impacts on and the impacts of sports on society. Join me as we learn how sports can influence important policy areas such as the environment, transportation, education, and so much more.
Mr. Speaker, it is truly an honor to rise in the Assembly today and present Budget 2024. In total, Budget 2024's capital plan invests $25 billion over 3 years in capital funding that will support Alberta's growing communities. That's an investment in not only the public infrastructure we need, but an investment in jobs for the folks who work on those projects.
Provincial parks continue to experience strong visitation growth with over 1 million visits to our provincial parks this past summer alone. We operate Sugarloaf, Mactaquac, and Mount Carlton year-round and offer educational programming through our parks. With the increased demand and expanded programming in our parks, Budget 2425 includes $586,000 to support park operations and ensure that we can continue to offer world-class experiences through our parks. In addition to supporting operations in our existing parks, we have added the Fundy Trail Provincial Park to our portfolio. Budget 2425 includes $2.9 million to support operations at the Fundy Trail Provincial Park, with investments to maintain, operate the park, and enhance the visitor experience. Our arts and sports sectors in the province play an integral role in maintaining vibrant and sustainable communities by promoting New Brunswick as a cultural destination, supporting visitor attraction, promoting healthy living, and contributing to vibrant and sustainable communities. $1 million will be provided to the Sport Development Trust Fund for the provision of community recreation and active living communities.
As part of our 2024 budget, we are also investing $200 million in a new applications-based community sport and recreation infrastructure fund. This will support new and improved sport, recreation, and community facilities right across Ontario. Because our growing population, not only do they need homes, new homes, and critical infrastructure, they need sports and recreation centers too. They need rinks and gyms and arenas right across this province. These facilities are often the center of entire communities where families get together, particularly in rural Ontario. They are key outlets for improving physical and mental health, including for families with children and seniors. They are centers of local sports and community scenes, and they help bring the entire community together in civil life.
Mr. Speaker, it is an honor to present Budget 2024, a budget that delivers solutions to meet today's challenges, that builds on a strong foundation to address the pressure people feel today. And it's a budget that brings more opportunities within reach for hardworking people. Because whether you live in a city, a town, a rural or First Nations community, many of us share a common hope for our future and that of our children and grandchildren.
Madame la Présidente, on sait que des services publics de qualité contribuent à créer des milieux de vie dynamiques, justes et sécuritaires. Dans le cadre du budget 2024-2025, une somme de 441 millions de dollars est investie pour promouvoir la pratique durable des loisirs et des sports dans un environnement sécuritaire, consolider la capacité d'intervention en sécurité publique et renforcer l'accompagnement judiciaire et les services aux personnes vulnérables. L'activité physique joue un rôle important dans le maintien de la santé et de la qualité de vie, en plus de contribuer à mobiliser et à dynamiser les communautés. À cet égard, j'annonce une somme de 39 millions de dollars visant à financer des nouveaux projets d'infrastructure pour les Jeux du Québec et à soutenir l'organisation des Jeux du Canada 2027 à Québec.
In order of appearance, that was Alberta's Minister of Finance and President of the Treasury Board, Nate Horner, New Brunswick's Minister of Finance and President of the Treasury Board, Ernie Steves, Peter Bethlen Falvey, Ontario's Minister of Finance, Katrine Conroy, British Columbia's Minister of Finance, Eric Girard, Minister of Finance for Quebec. So those are some select clips from a few budget speeches from across Canada, different provinces. And so there were many more that I did not include. And I did this, and, you know, I did this episode last year, and I did all the reflections on my own, but I thought this year would be really interesting to have experts on the podcast to talk about, you know, the investments coming from different levels of government, and really dive in and hear from these experts who work directly on budget submissions and hear their thoughts on the budgets and where their investments are actually going, and if they're needed, if they're going where they're needed to be going. So my guests today are Martin Sampson, who is the CEO at the Canadian Parks and Recreation Association. He is a dynamic and passionate leader who has been engaging in Canada's national conversation for 20 years, passionate about fully realizing the role parks and recreation play in building healthy and community and vibrant communities. Martin is proud to lead a team that represents the interests of the dynamic parks and recreation sector to Canada's federal government. Ottawa is Martin's home, where he has been working in public affairs for 2 decades. Mike Roma is the past president of the Alberta Recreation and Parks Association, and has also served on the Leisure Information Network Board and the Recreation for Life Foundation Board. Mike has been involved in the recreation and park sector for over 15 years and truly believes in the benefits of these essential services to the individual, community, and the environment. Mike is an active volunteer, participant, and coach, and lives in Sherwood Park, Alberta, with his family of four. So, you know, the conversation that we have really does focus more around the federal budget. We do kind of touch on individual provinces a little bit, and sort of the infrastructure gap and how many of these services are being funded by, you know, being led by municipalities, but they often have the least amount of resources to be able to put into these projects. So it is an interesting conversation, and I'm glad that we had it on the podcast again. But I do want to highlight just a couple more specific items from the federal budget, specifically in terms of announcements for sport and athletes. So budget 2024 proposes to provide $35 million over 5 years, starting in 2024 to 2025, and $7 million ongoing to the Department of Canadian Heritage for the Athlete Assistance Program. So this increases the funding allowance for supported athletes and support additional athletes in new Olympic and Paralympic sport disciplines. Budget 2024 proposes to provide $16 million over 2 years, starting in 2024 to 2025, to help the Department of Canadian Heritage for the Sport Support Program. This will help create a safer and more welcoming sport environment for athletes from amateur to Olympian. Priorities will include preventing and addressing maltreatment, supporting those with concussion and mental health issues, advancing inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility. Budget 2024 also proposes to provide $15 million over 2 years, starting in 2024 to 2025, to the Department of Canadian Heritage to help support community sport programming and reducing barriers to sport participation. This funding makes sport more accessible for young Canadians by helping cover the costs of community sport programs, ensuring every child has the opportunity to participate. There's also the Green and Inclusive Community Buildings Program, which is providing $1.5 billion in support to support green and accessible retrofits, upgrades of existing community public facilities, as well as the construction of newly accessible community facilities across Canada. This program is investing in projects like the retrofitting of the Connections Early Years Family Center in Windsor that makes it more accessible and energy efficient. So Budget 2024 proposes to provide $500 million over 5 years, starting in 2024, 2025, to Infrastructure Canada to support more projects through the Green and Inclusive Community Buildings Program. Budget 2024 also proposes to provide $156.7 million over 5 years, starting in 2024, 2025, with $388.5 million in remaining amortization to the Parks Canada Agency for capital investments in Canada's national parks, marine conservation areas, and historic sites. Budget 2024 proposes to provide $36.1 million over 5 years, starting in 2024, 2025, with $8.2 million in remaining amortization and $4.6 million per year ongoing to create the Ojibwe National Urban Park in Windsor, Ontario. So those are just a couple other items that I just wanted to highlight from the federal budget and that are related to sport and physical activity and recreation in Canada that I really wanted to highlight because I think they are important investments and you know they do kind of touch on what we talk about in the podcast, but you know, obviously there's a lot more going on in the budget than we can cover in an episode of the podcast because it is such a massive conversation. And also the provincial budgets, there's also a lot of really interesting things in those. So I've in the show notes, I've linked to all of the provincial budgets and the federal budgets, and you can go refer to them and look and see what's in them for yourself. So without further ado, we will get to the conversation with Martin and Mike now. Okay, welcome today to my guest, Martin Sampson, who's the CEO of the Canadian Parks and Recreation Association, or the CPRA, and Michael Roma, who is the past president of the CPRA. So welcome to you both. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And I'll pass it over to Martin first to introduce a little bit about yourself.
Well, thanks, David. Delighted to be here and really grateful for the opportunity to talk about this important subject matter with your listeners. So as you said, my name is Martin Sampson. I'm the CEO of the Canadian Parks and Recreation Association. CPRA's mission is to make life better for Canadians, improving their mental and physical well-being by ensuring that recreation and parks are appropriately reflected in the national conversation. We do three things. One, we are a voice to the federal government on behalf of our diverse and I would say essential sector. Two, we build community across that sector, across the country. And then three, we like to bring resources in the form of programs, research, and other tools to our sector so that the professionals who are animating the sector have what they need to continue doing the important work that they do in communities in every corner of the country.
Hey, and Michael.
Yeah, thanks, David. You can call me Mike too. Mike Roma with, I'm a past president of CPRA. I'm also a past president of the Alberta Recreation and Parks Association, which is one of CPRA's members. And in my day job, I'm a consultant. So I'm a managing partner at a consulting firm that works across Canada and focuses on recreation, sport, parks, tourism, kind of that sphere of things. Typically work for municipalities, but also work for provincial governments, nonprofits, and so on. Thanks for having me.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, thank you to you both for being here. Okay, so yeah, so let's get into it now. So this episode is kind of to talk like a debrief a little bit about the federal budget and the provincial budgets in Canada that just came out for 2024. And so, you know, CPRA had a pre-budget submission for the federal government, and your provincial and territorial counterparts had their own pre-budget submissions for their own respective jurisdictions. So let's talk a little bit about what you were hoping to see in the budget before we actually get to actually what was in the budget. What were you looking for in the budget? Like what were the gaps that you were trying to look for to be filled in terms of sport and recreation in Canada?
So to answer that, there's, I think, some necessary preamble. It's really important to note that in this country, the vast majority of public infrastructure is funded by municipal governments. So the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, with whom we work very closely, will tell you that, you know, 60-65% of public infrastructure in this country is paid for by municipalities. I would argue that in the case of recreation and parks, that might be as much as 90% of public infrastructure. And yet municipalities receive only 10 cents on every tax dollar. So there is an imbalance between there's an imbalance in the fiscal arrangement between levels of government. While most of the investment in this very important public infrastructure, when you think about it, this is the public infrastructure that actually forms the communities in which we live. So while municipalities invest disproportionately in it, a disproportionate amount of the return accrues to other levels of government, including the federal government. For example, recreation and parks are increasingly being called upon in crisis preparedness and response. You know, think about the people fleeing wildfires in northern Alberta last year. Think about where vaccination centers were set up. Think about what park rangers have on their job description now, managing things like encampments for people who are experiencing homelessness. You know, think about mental and physical health promotion. These are all things that are federal or provincial government priorities, and disproportionately municipalities pay for them. So one of the things that we wanted to see in the federal government was a signal that the federal government is going to play an important role in investing in this important sector, and particularly in investing in the infrastructure that allows the sector to make the contribution that it makes. Infrastructure, of course, being, you know, the hard assets, but also we wanted to see investment in the professionals, so workforce development, making sure that we have the capacity as a sector, you know, to do all the things that Canadians expect us to do, but also do all the things that Canadians are now starting to expect us to do in the area of crisis preparedness and response.
Okay. And so what specifically were you looking for in the budget? Like, what were you requesting from the federal government to invest in?
We had five things in our pre-budget submission. I'll dwell on the top two, and maybe we'll touch on a couple of the other three during the conversation. But we wanted to see a massive investment in infrastructure. Our pre-budget submission called for a significant investment in recreation and parks infrastructure. We have done the math. We know that the infrastructure deficit for recreation and parks in this country is somewhere around $40 billion. So we called for a $4 billion investment in each year for the next 10 years. That's an ambitious ask. We know that this is a very competitive, fiscal marketplace at the moment. There's a lot of demands on the federal government. So we wanted to see a signal that they understood the message. We never thought that they would be able to follow through on the recommendation we were making, the $4 billion. But we wanted to make sure that we relayed what the magnitude of the problem was, and we wanted to see some movement on that problem. And I guess we'll get into it in a moment. But we did see some movement. In the federal budget, there were a number of things that make us cautiously optimistic about what the future holds and about the role that the federal government can play.
Okay.
Maybe just one thing to add to that. Infrastructure across the board for local government is an issue, but one of the other things that the rec, sport, park sector has to kind of do is fight for itself within those municipalities, within the local government. So we wanted a portion of infrastructure funding to be earmarked or dedicated specifically for sport, recreation, parks type facilities. And in the past, when investments been made by the federal government or the provincial governments, territorial governments for that matter, if it goes to the municipality and it's not earmarked to go to a specific service area, doesn't necessarily make its way to that, to the portfolio. So not only infrastructure funding, but infrastructure funding dedicated or to be used for this specific service area.
Okay. And Martin, what was the second area that you wanted to touch on?
So the second area is an upstream investment in preventative health measures. So we know that the federal government is very concerned about the health transfers. We know that provincial governments are, struggling with managing our healthcare system, particularly coming out of COVID. And we know that Canadians are, eager to have some load taken off the healthcare system, particularly with the aging population. So one of the things that we called for was a upstream investment in preventative health measures in order to take some burden. We believe that our sector is very well positioned to support that, and we're in discussion with a number of other organizations under the leadership of Participe Action in discussions about an advocacy effort, a collective advocacy effort that we will be undertaking to hopefully advance that second recommendation.
Okay. And so we've already talked a little bit about why these, why these asks were important, talking about the gap in infrastructure, upstream health impacts. So we talked about a little bit of that context already. So I guess now we can just go right into, did we actually see those things in the budget? So you kind of mentioned that you did see some, trends or some positive things in the budget in relation to these requests. So what did we actually see? And maybe if you want to touch on provincial as well, if there's anything in provincial budgets that you'd like to highlight that you saw anything that was really good too.
Absolutely. So the process is interesting. We submitted our pre-budget submission to the Finance Committee in August of last year. And once we did that, we started on our advocacy effort. We hosted a lobby day in Ottawa, which is all of our members who went to carry the message to parliamentarians and policymakers. And in parallel, our provincial partners were doing something similar in their respective jurisdictions. That culminated in the Finance Committee issuing a report, making some recommendations to the Department of Finance, which were considered. And then the budget was released, as you know, last week. And in the budget, we saw explicit mention of recreation and parks multiple times and in multiple contexts, particularly in the context of infrastructure needs as we, as we embark on this major push to build new houses in this country. So one thing that it's very important to note is that just because it's in the budget doesn't mean it's a done deal, right? We saw some very encouraging language in the budget. We saw recreation and parks, as I said, mentioned explicitly several times, and we saw it referenced explicitly in the context that we wanted to see them referenced. So that's good. Now the work really begins in terms of budget implementation. And what we will be doing is a number of things. One, we will be continuing our discussion with our contacts in government as they actually develop the implementation bill. And we will be working very closely with our partners at the provincial level so that our message is consistent. And given the nature of these federal investments, the requirement usually for them to have bilateral agreements with the provinces, it's important that our members and our sector in each of the respective provincial and territorial jurisdictions are carrying a similar message to their provincial and territorial counterparts so that we can develop and design a package that makes sense, that doesn't forget this important sector that contributes so much to Canadian life, and that actually results in municipalities being able to access, as Mike quite rightly pointed out, not just the infrastructure money, but the infrastructure money, particularly for recreation and parks infrastructure. And David, I hope that we'll have an opportunity to talk about why this is important beyond, contributing to and keeping healthy a sector that does all sorts of things that Canadians expect of it. And then does all sorts of things that Canadians probably don't even know it does, but are increasingly relying on in this complicated world in which we live. Mm-hmm. And I would invite Mike to add anything to that, because I know he's thinking carefully about all of this as well.
Yeah, I would just add that, like, I've been paying attention to federal budgets probably for the last 15 years, like close attention. And this one by far has the most recognition or mention of recreation, sport, parks, infrastructure, and not only like in its traditional lane, but also the value of it in other contexts, like in other areas of the federal government. So yeah, like the tire hasn't hit the pavement yet necessarily, but if wording, which is an important part of this, right, if wording is in place, then definitely there's a heightened recognition of importance for sure. And I'd also say at the provincial level, Funding for sport and rec infrastructure is, I would say, cyclical at best. Some provinces and territories, you know, it comes around every 10, 15 years. Some provinces and territories don't have any dedicated funding for sport and rec. But right now, in Alberta, there was a pot of money allocated in the most recent provincial budget to community facilities, which is another term for sport rec, sometimes arts and culture, but primarily that type of community facility. And then also there was a budget announced in Ontario recently for that. So you got two of the, I don't know, two major provinces, you want to call it that, more populated provinces in Canada, recognizing that there needs to be investment, recognizing that it needs to be focused or directed specifically for this kind of infrastructure, mm-hmm. actually putting some money into it. I would make a comment just from my personal perspective, that the amount of those budgets allocated to this kind of facility are grossly insufficient still, but at least there's money being put toward it. And I'll just use an example, like there are communities of under 10,000 people that are looking at building facilities right now or reinvesting in facilities that would consume the entire amount that Alberta put towards these facilities. But yeah. But that's not to say that they're supposed to take, you know, full responsibility. It's these kinds of grant programs just help spur on what Martin said was primarily municipal investment in the first place. So,
yeah, and I guess I'm curious to know your thoughts on, do you think Canadians understand the case enough to be able to, to be investing, making these sorts of investments? Like, is the political will there from, the electorate to, push politicians and policymakers into that, in this direction of investing in, filling that infrastructure gap that we, so desperately need to, I think that we desperately need to fill, obviously, I think most Canadians would be occupied with, obviously health policy. And obviously this, as we've already kind of mentioned, this is obviously an upstream, this does impact and prevent, or preventative health measures. But so do you think Canadians are listening and paying attention enough in this space to recognize that this is a much needed investment and that it's a worthwhile investment? I don't know if, this is not exactly specific to the budget, but I guess, just kind of like Canadians' perspectives on these sorts of investments. I don't know if either of you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'll maybe go first on this one, Martin. Like, I don't think that we're as advanced in the public's thinking in Canada than maybe other parts of the world are in understanding the value of sport, physical activity, the necessary investment in it, but it is coming along. And that's something that Martin and I have been ingrained in the last year or so, is coming up with a measuring impact, it's called. It's like trying to start to tell a story of the value of parks and rec outside of the traditional ways to tell it, impact on health, impact on just a variety of different factors, but we're not quite in the same place as some other countries are, for sure. One of the reasons for that, in my opinion, is a lot of our decision making is short term, first off, with our political cycles. So the idea of spending a lot of money reinvesting in something and not really changing a service level is harder to sell with a short-term perspective than building something that's new and shiny. And new and shiny is great too. The demand for these kind of services are insatiable. Like, there'll always be people asking for more. So you can always go and build new stuff, but if you never reinvest into existing, your existing service levels are going to pay. So one is a short-term kind of perspective, and the other is just the overall cost of doing everything right now. My career has lasted just over 2 decades, and I've seen, like, just as an example, the cost of a swimming pool in my first swimming pool project was $3.5 million. I'm working on a project right now in a community in the prairies that's almost $200 million. It's not the same pool, but it's still a pool. It's just one pool, one facility, and it's $200 million on its own. So it's really hard to it was hard to make those investment decisions earlier in my career, you know, or to help communities through that, but it's almost like it seems impossible now. Mm-hmm. The communities are still thinking about it. They're doing things like having public votes on whether or not the public wants to pay, you know, a $500 or $1,000 property tax increase to support a project. But the overall costs are really, I mean, they're always getting in the way, but it's almost insurmountable right now.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about this and, you know, where the Canadian public is at in terms of these investments that, you know, obviously, you know, a lot of the infrastructure around us, not just parks and recreation and sport facilities, but a lot of other infrastructure is also really, really struggling right now. But it's interesting to think about where the Canadian public's head is at in terms of these investments and how we can sort of shift the public perception on, you know, these needed investments and how we can make them understand the value of them and the importance of them in our communities. And, you know, obviously there's much broader impacts than just health, but, you know, in terms of like, also just like community aspects, you know, community building, you know, tackling isolation and mental health issues and, you know, things like climate change and talking, you know, using parks as a way for adapting and, you know, reducing urban heat islands and everything like that. So I think there's a lot of different angles that, you know, that the sector and these investments can play into, you know, so many different angles and topics and policy topics. So with these investments that we've seen from, you know, the provinces of Alberta and Ontario and the federal government and kind of those languages that we've seen, what do you think that the implications are for, you know, the sport and physical activity sectors now moving forward? Like, you know, if we're actually able to implement this and get these investments going, how will it benefit the sports sector? Do we see that happening?
So we say recreation and parks, we mean mental and physical health promotion and mental and physical disease prevention. We say recreation and parks, we mean building healthy, vibrant, resilient communities. I think that one of the big challenges that we face is that the understanding of our sector, both from Canadians and from policymakers, is at best incomplete. You know, we're delivering enormous value. We could deliver even more value if it was recognized that the sector is not just, you know, giving your kids swimming lessons, as important as that is, you know, not just providing some outdoor space where you can go walk your dog, as important as that is. There are so many other things that the sector is doing and so many ways in which the sector can contribute. So, you asked a question about, you know, where is the Canadian public? The Canadian public, I think, is starting to awaken to these issues, largely in the context of housing, because as we build more houses, we are going to have more demand on the sector. There's going to be more expectations. There's going to be more need for the sector to do all the things that Canadians, you know, expect it to do and do all the things that Canadians are now starting to expect it to do, even if they don't realize that they're expecting to do it. And that's usually in you know, you touched on it in terms of crisis preparedness and response. You know, where do people go when they're fleeing wildfires? You know, what role do recreation parks professionals play in supporting people who find themselves homeless and are living in encampments? What role can the sector play in mental and physical health promotion in a way that takes load off of our overburdened healthcare system? So I do think Canadians are awakening to it. I do think that they will be, you know, demanding of policymakers a solution to the problem, even if they don't fully understand how that solution can be delivered. But I do think that they don't spend a lot of time thinking about levels of government. They want to know, are the services on the ground for me and my family, you know, to enrich our lives and to make our communities more resilient and safer? And that's, I think, where Canadians are going to be. And that's certainly what we want to do is get that conversation going. Because in order to fully deliver all of the vast benefits, right? There's social, there's health, there's economic, there's environmental benefit, not to mention just general quality of life about what we're doing in our communities. And in order to realize all of those benefits, we have to get very, very serious about how we invest in this sector. And I'll just say one more thing, just to drive the point, particularly on infrastructure. A wildly disproportionate amount of the public infrastructure that we're talking about was built during the centennial era. And so that means that, you know, we're talking about late 60s, early 70s, and so many of these buildings are beyond their best before date, which means, you know, they're not fit for purpose. They're not fit for the evolving purpose. And they're also not contributing as much to things like reducing the climate footprint. So we know that the federal government is very interested in the impacts of climate change and ensuring that Canada meets its international commitments. Think about what we could do if we, you know, were very deliberate and strategic about upgrading the HVAC systems in some of these aging buildings, for example, in, you know, leveraging the power of solar, right? That's why the federal government has a role. And I do think that Canadians are going to start seeing that. But, you know, David, your question really is, will Canadians vote on it? Will they make it a political issue? And I think as they start seeing their communities crumble and not able to respond to the evolving world, I do believe that over time, they will start making it more of a political issue.
Okay, yeah. So I, you know, just as you're talking there, I kept thinking back to a pool that I'm a competitive swimmer, and the pool that I kept swimming in, or that I swam in Fredericton, New Brunswick, it was built in like 1942, and it's been on life support. Like, so it was at the University of New Brunswick, and they've been talking about closing it for 15 years, and they've been talking about building a new pool in Fredericton for 20 years. And you know, I think it was in 2020, maybe 2019, just before the pandemic, actually, that they were announced that they were actually going to close it. They were finally going to close it. It, you know, it wasn't fit for purpose anymore. It was too expensive to, you know, keep it open. And then somehow they came up with some sort of plan to keep it open for another 2 years. And now it's 5 years later and it's still open and they still haven't built a new pool. And it's like, it is falling apart. And as Mike was saying, it's, you know, if they had built it in like, you know, 20 years ago, 2004 versus now, it would have been, you know, much, much, much cheaper to build. So it's interesting to think about these issues and how, yeah, you know, the more you delay it, the more issues come up with these infrastructure, the more the bigger the gap becomes that needs to be filled. Mike, I don't know if you have any thoughts on kind of the question about, you know, the implications for, you know, the implications of these investments, if they actually get out the door.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, like, I think that's a great example of where I was going to go with a couple of comments. One is like, I actually, so as a consultant, I'm trying to help communities make decisions about these investments. And I find that we're leaving the door open more and more now to actually reduce service levels, just because like when this was part of life in Fredericton, we could afford it, but now I'm not sure we could afford it. If you started many of our communities from scratch right now under the current market conditions, we probably have a lot less indoor facilities for sure. And we probably have a lot less outdoor facilities, even things like trails and stuff, just because it costs so much more to build per capita. It's not how it works, but just, you know, as a benchmark. So I think there will be some reduction of service levels that we'll see. That being said, that's a really tough short-term political decision to make, is to close a pool or to close a rec facility. So that short term kind of focus actually helps to make those band-aid reinvestments, but just not the major reinvestment that's needed. But then there are some pathways that I think we'll see communities take more and more. We already have seen them take, but that has to do with like maybe partnering with other municipalities to kind of tackle these major things together. So you mentioned New Brunswick, they have recently undergone municipal reform, and they have set up something called regional service commissions there. Other provinces have similar. We don't really have anything like that in Alberta quite yet, but they're regional bodies, municipal partnerships, I guess, that are mandated by the province to look at certain areas. And usually sport, recreation, parks is included in that area. So partnerships between municipalities. But the other thing we're seeing more and more of now is the private sector getting involved in providing services that usually or typically were just provided by government. And sometimes that's in partnership with the local government. Sometimes the private sector is just going and doing their own thing, and there's enough market and enough willingness to pay to actually, you know, sustain a business with a profit built into it, mm-hmm. and still render a community the services they want. And Martin went on and on about the benefits, and that's one thing, if you let us, we will go off the rails and talk about benefits. But most of the time, it doesn't matter if it's operated by a private sector or a local government, there's still going to be benefits that are accrued in mm-hmm. the community. It's just a question of how well all of your population can access those services, because the private sector is typically brings in a financial barrier that mm-hmm. public sector is supposed to at least not have as intensive one.
Yeah, I was about to ask, like, I was going to ask that, you know, your thoughts on whether it was good if the private sector was getting more involved in those spaces, because, yeah, as you mentioned, that there is sometimes a financial barrier about that, because they are trying to, you know, I guess, turn a profit, make those places profitable rather than making those places actually serve the community for the actual intent of, you know, of that actual space, and, you know, making it a space for the community. I think it's interesting that for sure that that private businesses and stuff are getting more involved in the spaces, that, and I guess it's good that it is profitable, but I guess that makes it more of a case even that, you know, if it's profitable, why can't governments see the benefits from those things? You know, obviously there's value in them, right? Like, obviously people want to do those things if they're paying for it out of pocket to go to, you know, potentially more expensive places. So why can't governments get behind it more? I don't know. It's just, that's kind of where my head goes with that question. But
David, the reason why the private sector can make money off it is because if you think about the user market for these kind of services, there's different, you know, kind of categories or levels to it, right? And the highest level in terms of affordability, which is a big part of the market and drives the public and private sector agenda, is that's the level where people have money and they're willing to spend it to participate in certain things. And the private sector can operate there, but the kind of lower you go in terms of affordability, affluence, whatever, you know, indicator we want to call it, the more the local government needs to chip in, right? Needs mm-hmm. to invest, as opposed to get profit. They need to invest in offering those services. So the private sector doesn't work in, you know, a community of 5,000 people because there's not enough critical mass, but it works in big cities. And I think it's okay in the big cities or in densely populated areas for the private sector to play, because that just means the more that they can meet the need of that most affluent, it's not the biggest, but it's the most affluent mm-hmm. part of the population, then the more the municipality can focus on, you know, providing services that are maybe more accessible for everybody. And typically, and this is a whole other podcast for you, but typically the perspectives of those affluent, you know, the ones that can't afford it, are the perspectives that dominate local decision making. So we make decisions of public investment to service those populations when arguably maybe we should be looking at different facets of the population with that investment. So the more the private sector comes in, the more maybe it'll allow local government to focus on those underserved. I like to use the term those that can benefit most from recreation and sport. We all benefit, but there are some facets of our population that don't have access right now or have lots of barriers to participation, and they could probably benefit more than the more fortunate like myself that have less barriers to participation.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, thank you both for this conversation. So I guess we're just about wrapping up, but if you had to give, maybe I'll ask this question to Martin, if you had to give the federal budget kind of a letter grade, where would you place it on in terms of, would it be a B, an A, a C? Where would you place this federal budget in terms of, the investments of what you're looking for?
So I will resist the urge to grade it until I have a chance to see what the budget implementation bill looks like. What I will say is that I am cautiously optimistic that an important message has been heard by the federal government, and that is this sector is accruing benefit to federal government priorities. They are aware of that. They are aware of that in the context of the push to build new homes. And if the language in the budget is any indication, they're paying attention to it in a way, as Mike said, that they may not have been paying attention to it in the past. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm looking forward to continuing the discussions with our contacts in the federal government and in supporting the conversations that our members are having with the provincial governments. And in, really bringing some attention to this need for the three levels of government to get together and have a conversation to figure out what the new fiscal arrangement will be so that we are providing Canadians with the services and the amenities and the infrastructure that they need to build the lives that they want to have and give to their children. So I'm dodging the question a little bit. I will say I'm cautiously optimistic, and I'm hoping to see more movement in the budget implementation bill. And maybe next time we talk, I can give you your letter grade.
Okay. Yeah. No. Fair enough. I'll take that answer. And okay. So my final question is, what do you believe the power of sport, physical activity, recreation is? Martin, do you want to go first?
I think it's absolutely transformative. I said we say recreation and parks. We mean building healthy, vibrant, resilient communities. One of the things that I spend a lot of time thinking about is how do we shift the perception of the sector away from what I think most people, probably know that it is, towards all of the other things that it is delivering on behalf of Canadians. Just imagine a country in which there were we did not have access to urban green space, where we didn't have the ability to teach our kids swim to survive programs, that we didn't have these gathering places so that new Canadians could integrate. The sector is way more important than the words recreation and parks suggest. So, these are at the very center of our communities. The professionals that animate this sector are unbelievable, and the contribution that they're making, I think, is not fully understood. And I'd like to see a shift in that in our policy discussions at all levels of government.
Yeah, and that's exactly what this podcast is trying to achieve a little bit. Change that conversation, really highlight all the different ways that sport can have, not just sport, but like physical activity. We try to expand the definition of sport, and how it can impact our communities. Mike, what are your thoughts on the power of sport and physical activity?
Yeah, like without getting into the specific details of what the benefits are, there's many benefits that come from having, thriving, robust sport, recreation, park systems in a community. So there's direct benefit, there's indirect benefit. And the way that I usually explain it is there's benefit that are accrued by the individual. So you get healthier, you're better off, you can look after yourself, you can be more productive in society. But there's also community benefit. And you touched upon it, David, today. And I think that it's just as important as the physical activity or the individual benefit. And that's being able to be connected to your neighbors, to people that have common interests to you, just to be able to feel social connection and part of something, very important for society. And The other thing is having these services in a community, they're benefits that, you know, quite a few of the benefits, you can't even escape them. If you sit on your couch and don't go to an ice arena or you don't go walk on a trail, your community is a better place for having those. And you're actually still benefiting, even if you're not participating in the actual activity. So I think they're very important for the individual community rationale, but then also you can't even escape. They're benefits that you can't escape. So very important.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much for your thoughts and your time on for today's episode and talking about the budget. And hopefully, you know, we keep continuing we continue to see these positive trends in future federal budgets and provincial budgets, and that Canadians really start recognizing the importance of these investments and really start making it, you know, a political issue to vote on at the ballot box. So thank you so much to both of you. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, David. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you once again to Martin and Mike for coming on the podcast to talk about their budget submission, what they were hoping to see out of the budget, and sort of debrief what actually came out of the budget, and talking about, you know, the ramifications, the impacts on sport and recreation in Canada through some of these investments that we're seeing. It was really interesting to hear from their perspective of exactly if we are making the right investments or not. And so, you know, that's my key takeaway. You know, I think it's my key takeaway is that we are seeing positive trends. So, you know, as they were both talking about, we still have a long way to go to filling the infrastructure gap. We still have a long way to go to making, you know, sport physical activity more accessible and affordable. But, we did talk about how there are positive trends, there are positive language in the budget, in the 2024 Canada's federal budget, and also some provincial budgets. There's positive language, and so we just need to keep that momentum going. We need to keep this conversation going. We need to make sure that politicians understand the value of these things, and we need to make sure that that Canadians understand the values of these things, and that it becomes a ballot box issue, and that, you know, the citizenry needs to be demanding that we're investing in these services. Otherwise, we are going to be seeing really, really significant cuts in what type of access we have to sport, physical activity, and recreation in our cities, in our rural settings, in our national parks, and et cetera. So I'm excited, and I'm happy that there are positive trends. I think there's still a long way to go. Personally, I think we need some more, more investment still in terms of sport for development. You know, kind of really reshaping the sport policy and taking a deeper look at, how sport can be used for so many, you know, different community benefits. You know, more targeted investments in making it affordable. More investments in that grassroots sports. You know, I did highlight a couple of things from the Canada budget for 2024, that they are making some small investments in this. I don't think it's quite enough, but it is positive to see those things coming along. And I think, you know, we have to keep talking about this, as I said. But so hopefully this episode was interesting and helpful, and you know, kind of helps us think about what's happening in Canada in terms of provincial and federal budgets, and you know, where to go to from here, how we can keep the conversation going, how we can keep advocating for the investments that are really, really needed. So thank you everybody for listening, and we will talk with you next time.